I am Jimbo Paris, and you are listening to the Jimbo Paris Show.
All right. How's it going, everyone? So today we have Robert Kennedy III, and he is basically the founder and CEO of Kinetic Communications. And basically, it's sort of, you know, a leadership development program and sort of a training company. And yeah, very interesting man. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, Jimbo, how's it going, buddy?
Good, good.
All right.
So can you kind of begin by telling me who you are, what you're about, and what your message is?
Well, let's do this, man. I'm a speaker. I'm a trainer. And a lot of times I go to places and I enter stages. So I want to enter the stage, how I do it. Can we do that?
Sure.
All right. Let's just do this. I just need you to say, ladies and gentlemen, introducing Robert Kennedy III.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, introducing Robert Kennedy III.
Hey. Yeah, no, I bring theme music, my friend. Hey, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. Doing good. So I can already tell you have some very good editing skills.
Why is that?
I don't really have too many people showing theme music like that. Very different. Well, very different. But I like it though. I like it.
I love it. Yeah, no, I just want to make sure that my energy is right and we give the people value, my friend.
You're the first person that's ever done that on my show. So thank you.
I try to be a pioneer.
So let me prod a bit here. So you're the third, right? I know somebody who's the third as well. So what's that about? That's interesting.
Well, we're trying to form a dynasty, man. My grandfather was Robert the First, my dad's Robert the Second, I'm the Third, and I've named my son Robert the Fourth, and we're trying to brainwash him a little bit so we can get the Fifth out there. Yeah, so we'll see what happens.
Okay. Now, how did this all start, you know, Kinetic Communications?
Well, it's been a journey. I was a teacher for 10 years, and after I left teaching, I started a leadership or an e-learning course development company. So we were building online courses for a lot of organizations like Johnson & Johnson, Panda Restaurant Group, Barnes & Noble. So we had a lot of larger companies in our cachet that we worked with. After doing that, I moved into the training space where I was doing a lot of leadership development training. And so after a while, we started to see some of the same questions. So we started to answer questions around communication mainly. And after a bit, decided to really lean in and focus in on that space and communication. So what we do now is we really focus on communication, particularly in the real estate industry. So we share with real estate brokers and agents and associations how they can communicate more effectively, how they can present their seminars, their workshops with power, with confidence, and how they can do that on video as well.
Why real estate?
Well, I was a real estate agent for 5 years in the state of Massachusetts when I lived there, and I've just had this interest in the real estate industry from an investing perspective for a very long time. So rather than so when we first started out, we were not doing that. We were kind of across the board in the learning and development space and would do it for a variety of industries, but made the decision to lock in that space to combine some of the things that I loved and had experience with.
Mm-hmm. And what do you love?
I love a lot of stuff, man. I love my family. I love my wife. I love my kids. I love pralines and cream ice cream. I love lasagna. Yeah. So I love a lot of things. I also love seeing the light go on in people's eyes and their brains when they've finally gotten a concept that they may not have understood before, or that they've finally been released or freed up to share their story or share something about themselves that had been previously locked up or locked away.
I'm feeling a lot of confidence coming off of you, which is a good thing. Was this confidence always this prominent, or was this something that you grew to realize?
Well, you know, I don't know what everybody's definition of confidence is. I think a lot of people think confidence is this flip switch, this thing that you some people have and some people don't. But my definition of confidence is repetition with the expectation of success. And so I think when you're in a space where you do something well and you've repeated it enough, then you can be confident in that space because you don't have to think about what you're up to or what you're doing as much. I've been speaking for a while. I was a teacher for a while, and I've been in front of people for a while on stage, on podcasts. So you might feel that. Put me on a cliff and tell me to jump off and swim in the water below it, you're probably not going to see the same confident guy. That's because that's not something that I do on a regular basis or have ever done. You know, I've jumped off a docks into the ocean, but not a cliff. So, you know, confidence really comes about with repetition.
Mm. So what was your childhood like?
Wow, that's a big question. That's a huge question. I'm a PK. My dad was a pastor. And so I was in church a lot. I moved around quite a bit. I was actually born on the island of Jamaica, and I lived there for the first 7+ years of my life. Then after that, we moved to Montreal, or actually we stopped in New York for a few months, but then we moved to Montreal. I lived in Montreal for about a year and a half, and then we moved back to New York. So I would say the formative years of my life were spent in the Bronx where I grew up. So, you know, a lot of moving parts, having to be adjust and be flexible with relationships and environment and surroundings quite often. And so really just having to be a kid or a person that learned to roll with the punches and not get too attached to a lot of things.
So like what, for example, did you get attached to, like in the Bronx?
I don't know that I got attached to anything in the Bronx. I mean, we moved. I mean, even when we were in the Bronx itself, we moved about 3 or 4 times to several different houses. So, you know, I had different friendships, relationships. I went to different schools, you know, and some of that was natural by moving from elementary to middle school and then from middle school to high school. All some of that was natural. You know, kids on the block, we played baseball together, moved from that block to another block. And so, you know, you were always having to adjust or renew or create new friendships. And so I don't know that there's anything specific that I was attached to.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you know, I may not have phrased that the way I wanted to. So mm-hmm. You move a lot. So you probably found a way of not getting too attached to people, but at the same mm-hmm. time building new connections as well. So you think that made you more of a social person?
No. As a matter of fact, growing up as a kid, I was known more as a shy child or a child that would rather be in his room playing with trains than being out at the party, right? And so being in front of or having conversations is a skill that I've worked at and developed over time. Part of it was because I knew that entrepreneurship or having a business was something that I wanted to be able to do and do well. So when you do that, one of the things you've got to do is you got to meet people, you got to network. And so going to networking events early on in my business career was a terrifying thing for me. I didn't want to do it. I wanted to go somewhere else. And so when I went to networking events, I would literally be in the room, in the corner, standing on the wall, just kind of walking around the room aimlessly, just so I didn't have to speak to people or make up an excuse to go to the bathroom or something like that. So after a while, I had to figure out how to get what I needed from that space and from that interaction, and then also give myself permission and realize when I was filled up so that I could exit, right? But also I had to really bring everything that I could to the time that I was in the room. So I had to learn how to be better at conversation. Hmm.
So how did you sort of come out of your shell?
I don't know that I'm fully out, man. Some of it is really just a decision to make, but the decision that I make is based on time frames. I know that I'm only going to be in a certain space for a certain amount of time, 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever it is. So I don't know if you've ever seen this movie called We Bought a Zoo. In the movie We Bought a Zoo, there's this line that says, in order to accomplish something great, all you really need is just 20 seconds of insane courage, right? And so mm-hmm. there's something that you can do. If you can bring yourself to a space and understand that you just need to push through a certain amount of time, then you're much more likely to be successful at that thing. Imagine going on, just deciding that you're going to run, right? And you're running and you're just like tired of running and you have no idea when the race is going to end. You have no idea. Are you as likely to keep running, or would you be more likely to give up? But if you know,
give up.
Yeah. But if you know that there's like 15 minutes left, or if you know that there's like half a mile left or a mile left, you're like, oh man, listen, this is gonna be
keep
over.
Going.
I can push through this. I can do this. So that's what I do. I really look at what the time is, and then I try to bring everything I can to that interaction or to that moment, because I know that after a bit, it's gonna be done and I get to go back to my shell.
I'm gonna be real with you for a second. You don't come across as a very introverted person. Like right now, what we're doing here is the exact opposite of what an introverted person would do.
This you see this like right here? You see this right here? You see the color? I've had some experience. I've had some practice. I've had some years of being able to do some of these things, make certain decisions, and after a while, know that I show up how I want to show up to a certain space. But when it's done, I'm drained typically. So as a speaker, and a lot of people think that it's like the oxymoron. How can you be an introvert and a speaker? You're on stage all the time. And I'm like, yeah, but then when I'm done, I don't really always want to people. I want to go back to my space. I want to go back to my room. I want to go back to the hotel. People are like, come on out and eat dinner with us. Come hang out with us. And I'm like, no, I want to go back to my room because I want to be alone and recharge at that point. Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of, you know, the charge, right? You said you liked trains and those types of things. What do you do for hobbies? Anything that?
Well, I mean, right now my hobbies vary. Over time, I used to play instruments, music, playing piano, keyboards was a hobby that I did. I love sports, so if I can play baseball or softball or golf, I'll play that. If we can play basketball, I'll play that. I think keeping active is something that I love to do. I love technology stuff, so I'm always messing around with apps and cameras and, you know, all sorts of stuff. I don't know if you can see like the shelf back here. I've got like several microphones in my museum back there. So, you know, I like learning new things and exploring new things and messing around with stuff, man. So that's my story.
Okay. So I kind of want to get more into your journey sort of as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So when you were trying to build those networks in the beginning, what eventually did happen to build that first connection? What was that first connection?
I don't remember the very first one. I think a lot of connections were built out of maybe relationships that I already had over time from church or family or people just making introductions to me. Those are some of the connections that really launched some of the parts of my business. But I think in regard to networking, it's what I said earlier. It's really identifying who you want to speak to, identifying the type of person, the role, the company, all of those different things, and then figuring out what you need to say or putting yourself in that space to have either a conversation or an interaction with that person. So over time, I got better at doing that. I got better at having some of those conversations and creating interest enough so that people are like, wait a minute, this dude's not like just shoving a business card at me like everybody else. There's like something interesting about him, and having another conversation would be cool, right? And so, I think just as a value add to your audience, if you want to be memorable, or your goal is to be memorable in interaction. So what is it that you bring to an interaction that causes people to remember you? Do you ask questions well? Are you energetic? Do you smile a lot? Do you laugh? Well, is your clothing memorable? Is your image, is it something that stands out that people are going to say, yeah, it was the guy that had the orange blazer on, right? Whatever it is, figure out how you can do at least one thing that is memorable so that you can further the interactions. And when you have those things that make you memorable, it's easier to continue the conversation later on and grow trust through that.
Okay. And how did you stand out?
And that's varied over time as well. My standout, I started out by figuring out what was a different question that I could ask. A lot of times, especially at networking events, you go to them and people ask the same questions. Hey, what's your name? Where are you from? So what do you do? Right. And that's kind of like the general question. But I try to figure out how to ask questions that were different. I might ask something like, hey, did you get to the hors d'oeuvre? What's the best thing that you tasted at the hors d'oeuvre table tonight? Right. Or who do you want to meet? Is there somebody that I can introduce you to? What's the best takeaway or what's something fantastic that you've learned at this event tonight? Right. And I want to make people's brains begin to agitate and move a little bit so that they remember that, you know, our interaction becomes sticky, right? Because I created something that allowed them to be out of the norm with everybody else, right? And so that's one thing. I've done things like my energy is something that I try to bring to a situation because I think that's memorable. It certainly helps from the stage. It certainly helps as a trainer when you're not boring, yeah? Right? And so, those are two big things. But over time, I think as I've gotten a little bit older, dress is something that I do. I do a little bit differently when I'm in public settings as well. I want to not just wear the same busuit as everybody else. I'll add something. It may be a boutonniere, a flower. It may be, a different type of pocket square. It may be a blazer that just kind of is different for an entire, we're at a formal event, and instead of wearing a regular blue skirt, I'm wearing a plaid double-breasted outfit, right? With sneakers, with Air Force Ones. So people, they're like, oh, it's that dude, that guy that was dressed like that. So whatever it is that you do to spark a conversation and be memorable, that's going to help you.
Okay. Now, keynote speaking is a different story. So you public speak, right? So how was it easy for you too, or was it just as difficult?
What do you mean? Was it easier for me to just start speaking?
Yeah. So was it just as difficult as when you were networking?
Yes, but not for the same reason. So when you're networking, you kind of have to keep a conversation going, or you have to spark different conversations. When you're keynoting, you only have to have one conversation. You're having one conversation with the audience. And yes, it's got to be a conversation of some sort. Get them to respond to you. So it's not just a monologue. You want to create a dialogue of some sort. And so it was less challenging because I only had one conversation to have, but you were also in a space where you had multiple people on you and you had to create interest over time, right? In a conversation, you may have to keep their interest for maybe 5 minutes. In a keynote, you got to keep interest for like 30 minutes or 45 or an hour or whatever the case is. So I had to get really good at storytelling. I had to get really good at creating or using frameworks or structures that allow me to walk through a conversation and still keep it interesting.
And why do you think, keynotes are important, at least for your business and maybe for other people's businesses as well?
Anytime you have the ability to stand in front of people and share information, positions you as an expert, right? It positions you in an area of expertise, especially if you have a business. One of the best ways for you to get people to know about your business or what you do or how you can help solve a problem is to stand on a stage in front of them, right? From the time that we're all kids, we've seen people on stages, and for some reason, whether they're smarter, brilliant, richer, whatever it is, people on stages draw our attention, right? Because inherently we kind of think like, oh my gosh, they're up there, so they must know something that I don't. Not always true, but that's the perception, right? So if you're in a business or if you have a business or you want to promote something, how can you get on stage in front of people? And these days, it's so much easier to do that. You can have YouTube as a stage that you can have. We're on a stage right now on your podcast, right? Because although it may seem like there are a lot of podcasts and videos in the world, most people don't have the courage to do it, right? So most of the viewers, most of the people that are watching, that are listening, they don't have their own pages or their own podcasts. So our job as presenters, as experts, is to now create a story or create a narrative that allows people to say, oh my gosh, yes, that's the thing that I want to do. Yes, that's the service that I want. Yes, that's the problem that I have. And what you shared today helped me to solve it, So, yeah, figure out how to get on a page.
So, speaking of building stories, you're a best-selling author as well.
Yeah.
So, what's your book?
I've got a few books. My very first book was a technical book by a company called, it was when I was doing e-learning courses, I wrote a technical book about a software that we use. After that, I did a personal development book called 28 Days to a New Me. You probably see it over my shoulder here and back. And there were two other books that I wrote after that. One was called 7 Ways to Know You Were Meant to Lead. And the last one a couple of years ago was called Find Your Voice, 20 Seekers to Inspire You to Speak Up.
So I always hear some interesting stories about writing books, and it seems like you've written a lot of books. So how was it like writing your first book?
It was scary. It was worse because I had a publishing company that was breathing down my neck about getting the content out. And so in actuality, I hired a ghostwriter for that one. And because I was scared about writing the actual content. And so I hired a ghostwriter. I would get up in the mornings and I would talk and he would listen and he would write. And then he would put all the stuff together. After that, my other books, the last three were self-published. And so that process took a little bit longer in some ways, but I was also a little bit more comfortable with the process of creating a book or writing. And so I took the time, did it, and gave myself a little bit of grace and wasn't super critical of some of the things, although you want it to be. If you're going to be super critical of every single thing, you'll never complete anything. So I just was as brave as I knew how to be and got stuff down on paper and got it out.
Did that quote you just said come from experience? If you want to be super great at everything, you can't be critical.
Say that one more time. I didn't hear all of it.
Yeah. So if you want to be super great at everything, do you want to be critical? Did that quote come from experience on your end at some time of your life?
I believe so. I mean, no one is going to be super great at everything, right? You've got to either decide what you want. Do I want to be great in one thing, or do I want to have a great breadth of knowledge of a lot of things? And nothing is wrong with either. They both get you different results. You've just got to decide what you're cool with, what you're okay with, how you want to show up, how you want to be remembered. Brendan Burchard has this statement, like at the end of everybody's life, they ask three questions. Did I live? Did I love? Did I matter? Right. And so, you know, do you want to matter? What is it that you want to be remembered for? You know, a specific thing, or being someone that was curious in a lot of things, and both have their advantages.
So which one have you chosen? Specific thing or curious?
You know, I'm curious. I've been great at specific things in different parts of my life. There was a part of my life where I was in a music group and I focused on that and I locked in on that and we recorded and I wrote music and I composed things. And I was known for doing that in that time of my life. There's another time of my life where I decided that I wanted to really grow a business. And I started to learn about doing that. You know, as a part of my business, I've learned to be a speaker or a storyteller. And I've become known in some circles for that. That's the thing that people know about me and you know, give me credit for or call me an expert in that specific area. You know, but I think I want to be a continual learner. I like interesting things. I like variety. And so, yeah, I think I want to consistently learn new things.
Okay. Now, if we could kind of jump back here for a second. Your father was a pastor, right?
Yep.
So how was it like having a pastor as a father?
There was a lot of pressure. People had expectations of you. And as a kid, you don't know that you could skirt the expectations and do what you need. So pastors' kids tend to do one of two things. Either they go wild and just say, you know what, you know, forget what y'all are saying. I'm just going to do this. Or they are rule followers and they kind of walk in. They go into a shell in some way. So I was not the one who skirted the rules. There were a lot of people who always said, oh, you can't do this. You got to do this. You're the pastor's kid. Right. And if they saw me doing something that even came close to being questionable, yeah, we're going to tell your father. Right. So there was a lot of that growing up, not just in my church, but in different spaces like my schools. And, you know, there were times where I was walking down the street, people who I didn't know just randomly would say, oh, you're Pastor Kennedy's son. Right. So, you know, that's the curse and the blessing of having a father who's a pastor and who's also well known and active in his community, you know, always connected with politicians and figuring out how he can create change in the community. You know, he did a lot of good things. It also created some notoriety for me where I wasn't always able to hide.
So you think that kind of helps you in a way too?
Oh yeah. Like I said, there's blessings and curses. It's tough, but it also creates opportunities for you because people know who you are. It's easier for them to access you to present things that may be of value or show you ways that you can be of help to others more easily, right? They don't have to search that hard to find you. So there's that blessing in it. Sometimes people give you stuff or help you out because of who you are. That there's that blessing in it. But again, life isn't this thing where some people have it easy and other people have it hard, right? Whatever life you have, we just choose different sets of problems to have. And so, you know, like I said, blessing and curse, man.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when it comes to all of these different skills you have, how did you begin teaching and coaching people?
Well, I think there was always a piece of me that is a teacher. My mom is a teacher or was a teacher. She retired some years ago. And so my dad, even though he's a pastor, he spent some years as a university professor as well. So I think there's some teaching that is in my blood. And maybe no matter what I do, I don't fully step away from it. As a matter of fact, as a keynote speaker and workshop presenter, that's teaching grown up pretty much. All right. So, you know, how did I get into that? I just, again, my curiosity always allowed me to try to learn new things. And whenever I learn things, I tend to share it with other people. And sometimes people come to me and ask me questions. And because I'm able to answer it, they come back and say, hey, you answered that last one. What do you think about this? And so I've just always found myself in position to teach people things.
And how do you begin sort of teaching people?
Well, I mean, I hope I'm answering your question when I say this. People always, everyone has a problem. Everyone has a challenge that they need to navigate. And so part of it is being open or being observant about those problems and being open and available when those problems pop up in your vicinity. The other thing that you may do is just, you know, you have an interest in something, you have a passion about something, and you intentionally decide, I want to teach about this thing, right? You may decide, hey, I like computers, I like technology, I want to teach people how to use it. I want to teach people how to use social media because you enjoy it. So if people are struggling with figuring out purpose or figuring out how they can make money or figuring out how they can do something amazing in the world, look at what you're already doing. What is it that you're already interested in? What do you already do well? Or what may come easy to you, but people keep asking you about it, right? That may be something that you can do or teach so that can help others and transform the world.
I don't think I ever asked this, but what comes easy to you?
What comes easy to me? Doing things on computers comes easy to me. My wife says I'm a better Googler than she is. I don't know. I just always seem to be able to find what I need. My, you know, if there's an app for it, I can find it. You know, I assimilate information, I organize information fairly easily. I teach, or I'm able to figure out how to create an environment or an experience where people want to learn. So those are things that come easy to me, and I work at them, but maybe they come easier than some other people.
Okay. So when it comes to who you are as a person. Would you consider yourself a coach or a counselor?
I think there's a bit of both. I don't know if it's one or the other. I think it really depends on the circumstance. There's times where I'm a coach because I see something in people and I'm able to kind of pull and help them extract it or discover something that is able to help them move forward. I can be a counselor because there are times where people are walking a path and they may not understand how to get to where they want to go, or they may be confused about where they want to go. So counseling in some ways to help them suss out or process what are the directions that they can go based on maybe the skills that they already have or the passions that they have or the things that they like.
Now, when it comes to your client base now, what would you consider your perfect client and what would you consider a client you wouldn't want to work with?
Let's start with the wouldn't want first. I don't want to work with a client that I've got to run after. I don't want to work with a client that it says they want to do something, but they're not committed to it, right? Or if there's a challenge that gets in their way, they immediately are wanting me to do it for them, or they just kind of run away and my entire job is chasing them and trying to encourage them to do something. I enjoy encouraging people, but I don't want to have to do it constantly because you have not been willing to commit to the work, right? I don't want to work with those clients, right? My ideal clients are people who are excited about what they do, agents or brokers who really want to make a difference with their prospects or their clients. I want them to be able to share stories and speak in a way that excites people, enthuses them, and helps them to be willing to make the changes that they need to make in their own life.
All right. So we're talking a lot about clients here. So what are some of your best sort of success stories?
Wow. You said some. We could do a whole lot of success stories, but I think we'll just stick with maybe one or two. I've had clients that after taking speaking sessions or speaking classes, I'll give a simple one. There was one client who was applying for a job and had to give a sales presentation. It was freaked out, just scared out of her wit, and came to me. We worked together for a few sessions, and she was offered a job with I think about 50% more salary than she was expecting in that. So that is one success story from an individual. From a company perspective, there have been companies where I've done training, we've done workshops with them, and they've come back and stated that their entire department has been transformed, and they are more confident, they're more comfortable, they deliver information more easily. And as a matter of fact, that's caused their meetings to be shorter because they didn't ramble and go all around. They didn't take the scenic route for their conversations. So I think some of those are some good stories.
Okay. How did all this make you feel?
Repeat for me, please.
How did all this make you feel?
What, when I got the success stories?
When you got that positive feedback, how did you feel after that?
I love it. I love receiving positive feedback. I'm excited by it because I love seeing the transformation in people. The teacher in me loves seeing the light bulb go on, and it just makes me feel like, yeah, there are more people that need this and we can do this again.
And when you continue moving forward and forward with this business, what's the future?
The future is replicating myself in some ways. The future is hiring additional trainers, which we're looking to do by first quarter of next year, and really creating a business that doesn't necessarily need me in the front of it to run. Like creating something that outlives me. That's the future.
That's a bit of a fascinating interpretation. They're creating something that outlives you. So would you consider your business more of like a personal brand now or more of a business brand? You think you're sort of the face of the business more so?
Oh, I definitely am. I'm the face of the business currently, but we are moving in the direction where it's, you know, it doesn't have to be me. Although it may be my face in things like video or marketing or, but it doesn't have to be me delivering lot of the content. We've done partnerships where we have trainings that are co-branded and co-delivered. So we've explored quite a few different things. But really what I want to be able to deliver and leave with the world is methodologies, frameworks, and structures that people can use to transform their lives and help others change their lives through stories.
Okay. And why would you sort of want this sort of for you, you know?
Well, I mean, we talked about it a little bit at the beginning, legacy, right? I talked about the dynasty that we're looking to create with my son. I think my goal, I believe that everybody's purpose is the same, to transform the life of at least one person while we're here. And after I'm gone, I will hopefully have grandchildren and great-grandchildren and people that are after me. And I want them to know that in their family line, I want them to know that people that are blood related to them made a difference in the world. And because they did it, they can, my line, my lineage can do that as well.
Mm, okay. And you talk a lot about lineage. Why do you value lineage so much?
Well, because I think nobody is who they are by themselves. Some group of people has poured into all of us. And I believe that is important. I mean, if we go back to the African concept of village, right? Everything that we do, everything that we are is as a result of a collection or an amalgamation of experiences and people that have poured in. So legacy and lineage is important because it's it's good to give credit to the people and the line that created who you are. That's important for me.
You know, I find that very fascinating because that same philosophy is the exact opposite that America generally has. It's more about just solo, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think as people have that concept, they live most of their lives that way, or they live their lives that way, but then they always get to a point in life where at the end of it or at some point in it, they find what's truly important. They find that companionship. They find that friendship. They find that relationship. They find that connection is truly important. And none of that happens solo. None of that happens by ourselves. So, you know, I know because we have a materialistic society or because we have an individualistic approach to things, especially when we're younger in this Western culture, it can be what stands out, or that can be what's out front. That can be what the media promotes. But ultimately, at the end of the day, what becomes important to all of us is the relationships, the connections that we've formed, and the memories and the moments that we've created inside of those relationships.
And how would you... Well, there's actually something right now on the tip of my mind, so I want to get into it. So you're a part of the National Speakers Association as well, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How did that happen? That's very impressive.
That's an organization. I intentionally joined it. Once people started asking me the questions, hey, are you a speaker? I started to search out the organizations that could help me not only improve as a speaker, but how in organizations that could help me grow my business as a speaker. And so the National Speakers Association is the top speakers association or organization in the United States. And there are other organizations worldwide that are like sister organizations, but I wanted to be among the best. I wanted to be around those who did it professionally and were successful at it. So that increases my chance of being in a space or understanding how to do this thing that I'm gifted at.
So it's like the next level Toastmasters.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit different. Toastmasters teaches you to speak. National Speakers Association teaches you how to build a business. How to build a speaking business.
A speaking business. What is that?
Like any other business. I mean, most of what I do is speaking. I make money through speaking. Professional speaking. So I'm a professional speaker. That's if I had to give myself a title, that's what it would be.
Okay. Professional speaker. And... You know, I'm hearing, you know, you have all these other books as well. Which other books do you think also hit you as really phenomenal as well.
There are a lot of different books. I'm reading one right now called The Power of One More by Ed Milet. That's a phenomenal read. My dad gave me a book several years ago that I loved called Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker. There are a lot of books that are communication written or read by, there's a one called Talk Like Ted, The Power of Storytelling by Carmine Gallo that I love. There are a lot of different books. What it really depends on what you want to do to develop yourself, what space you're in, and what you're looking to, what area you're looking to grow in that moment. But there are a lot of phenomenal growth and development books out there.
Great. Okay. And you have a website, right?
Yeah, I've got my main speaker website is robertkennedy3.com. And, people want to touch bases with me. They can reach out at robertkennedy3 on all social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. I'm robertkennedy3, the number 3, not III, no Roman rules, just alphanumeric 3.
Okay, excellent. All right, let's take a look at your website. That seems really cool.
All right.
So what's the purpose of your website in a way? Is it to just showcase more so your books or your courses?
No, to have people know what I speak about and maybe who I speak to. And we're actually in the process of revamping right now. So we'll have the newly developed website out within the next few months. But it's really just about what is my core? What do I love? What am I passionate about? And what problem I can help people solve?
Okay, so is it possible for you to kind of run us through the website just for anyone that may be interested in looking at it and looking at your content and all of your advice and sort of the value you have?
Yeah, so that website, like I said, right now we're updating some things, but pretty much it's a speaker website. If somebody's a meeting planner, if somebody is an event professional, if somebody's in the learning development department of their company, they would come here and they see, okay, yep, Robert is an event speaker. Yep, Robert does emceeing. Yep, Robert does corporate facilitation and keynoting. And what are his topics? They would go to the speaking page and they would find a one sheet, a speaker one sheet that would share the topics that I speak on. It would also be able to see bios and they would learn a little bit about me, where I came from, you know, what I teach and how I can help their organization.
Okay. And you also seem to have a blog too.
Yeah, there's a blog. We actually haven't updated that blog in a little while, more so because we've been focused on video content and other types of content over the last year plus. So, but there's still a lot of really good information or a lot of great articles in there. If you're interested in how to become a better public speaker, a better storyteller, a better communicator, there are a lot of things there a lot of articles there that will help you do just that.
Okay. And so what is one of your favorite blog posts sort of at the start of your business?
Brother, you're asking me a big question. You're trying to go into my brain cause me to remember stuff. I mean, I don't know that I have one specific favorite. You know, I think if you scroll up just now, there were something that was, what was it? Three. If you go up just a little bit more. Three tech tips. I mean, I like reading about technology things. So, anything that really helps, especially over the pandemic, anything that really helps to show up their best on camera, on screen, and be able to tell their stories more effectively. Those are some things I enjoy writing and reading.
Okay. All right. So is that everything, kind of? I see a phone number to the upper right-hand corner.
Yep, so that's our phone number. You want to get connected with us, you want to book us, you want to have conversations about how we can help solve a problem or run a program for your organization, you can give us a buzz, 410-575-3657.
All right. So again, this has been an excellent interview. I definitely enjoyed speaking to you. And kind of to end this off, I'm still going to ask you a few more questions. So one thing that I'm thinking of, and now this may sound a bit interesting to you, if you could go back in time and speak to your younger self, what would you tell him?
Be bolder earlier. Yeah, it's going to be okay. A lot of times, a lot of the things that we worry about don't come true. So just be courageous.
Okay. Be bold early. All right. And the final thing is, I think I asked you what the future was, but are there any additional businesses that you plan on building?
Maybe. I mean, I'm interested in real estate investing, so I think we may add a real estate investing arm to what we do. So.
Great. Okay. And do you have any final words you'd like to say to the audience?
Tell your stories. I, at the end of a lot of shows and podcasts that I run, I run into people that are scared of sharing their lives or share or being vulnerable in some way because they feel like people are going to criticize them. But here's the deal. Everything that happens to you in life is your stuff. Your stuff is your story. Your story deserves a stage. So get on out there and tell it. Go make a difference for somebody.
Okay. All right. Well, this has been a great interview. Thank you again.
Thanks so much, Jimbo.
So right now, I'm going to give a quick shout out, a special thanks to our sponsors, Ann and Kimiana Jones Bay. They are in real estate and they are teaching you how to make six figures. And again, take their course and check them out. And then we have LifeWork Systems. This is our collaborative partner. She's basically an HR master and she's there to kind of help boost the HR infrastructure in your business. And now, if you look at the upper right corner, you could subscribe to us now. Just again, click there. And then finally, we also have a Roku channel. Check us out on Roku. This will be on demand as well as live as you were looking at it previously. All right. I'm Jimbo Paris. This is the Jimbo Paris Show. Thank you for watching.
Thank you for listening to the Jimbo Paris Show.